Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
So let's get started and talk about getting butts in seats, which, long story short, is about how to build some momentum, how to get some mass in order to be able to move forward with a healthy church plant. Before we dig in, though, let me pray. Father, we thank you so much for today, for the sunny weather here, and mostly just for all the church planters who are gathered here in this place. God, I pray that you would pour out your blessing upon their churches, their plans, that they would honor you in whatever context they're in. God, I pray that you would protect them and guide them to plant your church in whatever community they're in. It's in Christ's name that we pray. Amen. That does remind me a little bit of just kind of one asterisk I want to put on the whole conversation today. Every one of you is in a different context. As I kind of joked early on that, you know, nothing we say today will work for all of you, but hopefully something we say will work for each of you. Everybody's context is different, and one of the problems you can often have in a conference like this is you come and you hear someone say something that worked for them, and you go home and you do that exact same thing, and it doesn't work for you. Just because Rick Warren wears Hawaiian shirts and flip-flops doesn't mean you should plant in Boston with Hawaiian shirts and flip-flops. That may not be the most effective way to reach people. There's rarely a silver bullet. Hopefully something that we say today might just be one sentence that comes even from one of you in this room will change the direction of one of your churches in the future, and hopefully that will happen multiple times. I'm Pat. I'm the executive minister of New Life Christian Church. We're about 23 years old. We were a church plant before church planting was cool, when it was just stupid because nobody knew what they were doing. But somehow God blessed it, and we're still around and have been able to be a part of about 100 church plants in a very significant way, as well as countless others in indirect ways.
Where's New Life?
Northern Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C., Chantilly specifically. We're multi-site. We have two physical locations plus an online campus. That is more than just streaming. It's actually a growing campus, which is kind of neat. I actually came out of the secular workplace doing computers and stuff like that to go into ministry at New Life. That's been a value of ours. Dale here retired from the Navy, went to work for the Boeing Corporation. Not Boeing, the Boeing Corporation.
As opposed to the
trailer. Right. Because there are so many Boeings. Yeah. He's a project manager that works with church plants all across the U.S. He's running our church planning residency, or training center, we're calling it now,
our church planner training center,
has his hands in a bunch of stuff. So I hope we can help encourage you guys to build some momentum. It's a little bit weird to talk crassly in terms of butts in seats, and it is not about numbers. I hope you understand that, you know, our goal isn't just, okay, you get 100 people in a room and bam, you've won, you've succeeded, or maybe your number is 500 or 1,000 or whatever it is. As they've said from the main stage multiple years now, you know, size for the sake of size is not what we're after. However, people are going to hell every day. And we need to do everything we can to reach as many people as we can. We need to have a healthy amount of mass in order to gain momentum. If momentum is, if I remember my physics right, size, direction, and velocity, we all want a growing church. So we always need to be attracting new people into the community. Plus, you know, from a church planting standpoint, I would love to say go to Starbucks and meet a person, lead them to Christ, and then go back to Starbucks meet a person, lead them to Christ. And if you're if you can do that, that's fantastic. But what you'll find is it will take you a really long time before you can provide for a salary. It'll be a really long time until you can afford rent for a place. So, you know, we're not against personal evangelism. We're not against one-on-one sort of stuff. But there's a piece where for the survival of a church plant, you have to get a core of people. You have to be able to reach beyond your immediate social needs, or sorry, social circles, in order to connect with more people. And we'll talk about what that means in the coming slides. The biggest mistake people make is just giving up. I know that sounds kind of dumb, and yes, I use cheesy pictures sometimes, but it's easy to get caught up in the church machinery and the operation of the church and forget that we're on mission. Your purpose is not to sit in your office and write a sermon. Sermons are important. You have to preach them every Sunday. Yes, you're declaring the gospel, but your purpose is to grow the church. That looks really good. To grow the church, to lead people to Christ. Let me read this quote from Bill Easom about the one of the biggest mistakes, quote him a couple times, church planters make. One that stood out above all the rest, a mistake the planners made, was that the pastor gets caught up in the church machinery and loses sight of what makes it all go around, building the kingdom one person at a time. I've watched dozens of church planners get 125 people in worship by focusing on getting butts in the seats, only to shift gears around 125 and start worrying about developing leaders or organization. And guess what happens? New people stop showing up. The same thing happens in established churches. Now the members expect to be entitled, and the lost are forgotten. So don't take your eye off the prize. Bringing people into the kingdom and the church is the most important task on earth. Don't lose it. So I know immediately the question I ask, well, what about discipleship? You know, we talk, you know, last year's theme was discipleship, and how do we do that? Well, also from Easom, maybe a little more recently, and I think there's it's not an either-or, but there's a tension here. Bill said, I've always told them the most important thing they can do is get butts in seats. I just read that. Don't worry about serious discipleship until you get a crowd. The problem with this is that by the time you get a crowd, the culture of the church is one of accumulation instead of multiplication. Instead of get butts in seats, I should have been teaching disciple as you go. Don't wait until you have a crowd. Disciple from day one with your first recruit or convert. These shifts the focus from spending 80% of your time getting butts in seats to spending most of your time both inviting and discipling those who are ready. So what you're looking for is the both and. So we're going to talk more about, you know, attracting people in, getting butts in seats, but please don't take, you know, the fact that that's what we're focusing on this session to use that as an excuse to not disciple people along the way. One of the best ways you can disciple people is to bring them along with you as you are getting butts in seats. So that's the end of the big asterisk at the beginning on this whole topic. So we're going to talk about a couple things, and yes, I do tend to talk fast because I want to leave lots of times for questions at the end. We have this posted already on our website. If you go to church, you're welcome to take pictures of it. He's going to write up the web address, and then it's buried a little bit, I'm sorry, but you just basically need to drill down into the free resources, and you'll find it there. So I want to talk about this funnel, because ultimately, and I apologize, my font messed up here on the funnel, but we're going to talk about moving people from your community into your church to disciples. And I probably should have called this the relational funnel, because at the bottom you've got this little narrow spigot where the people that you're actually discipling. But in order to have a constant string of people that you're discipling, you need to have people you're in relationship with. In order to get people in a relationship with you, you have to do some sort of networking outreach beyond your circle, which ultimately involves marketing. So view each of these things as working together. One of the guys I used to work with, Doug Fultz, he's with Stadia now, synthesized some of this. and was really talking about the spheres of influence here, and he really challenges his church planners to have 60 people in a discipleship relationship. And that's going to be your launch team, your core. Those are the people you're really investing in, leading deeper into Christ. And that's a fairly big number. But I will tell you, we've done a couple surveys in our organization, Passion for Planting, and found that church plants that have at least 40 adults in their core group before they start Sunday weekly services had much better health metrics 6 months, 3 years post-launch. They weren't just surviving, they were thriving. The churches that made it happen with 12 or 20 people might have still been surviving, but they were really struggling with momentum. There's something about, I don't know what it is, I can't explain it, 40 is not a magic number, but there's something about having enough people to spread the work a little bit, enough people to get the word out a little bit, that makes a big difference.
And I was going to say that that 40 is not butts in seats. That's a 40 people that are committed adults that get the vision, mission, and they're like mini yous. So you're not the only one walking around the community talking about the vision and mission of the church. They can do the same thing. Mm-hmm. They can give the elevator speech. They can make the ask. They can talk about it passionately about your church. So that launch team are not just warm butts and seats. These are people that are like mini yous that can talk the vision and mission.
Yeah.
Is that 40 for your launch team or 40 for your core group?
That's a great question, because a lot of people can't appreciate the difference between launch team and core group. Personally, I've seen churches do it both ways. The key is 40 committed people who are going to help make it happen. If they're there temporarily to help launch the church, that's fine. If they're there to be part of the church long term, one thing that I always, when launch team versus core group comes up, I want to share is, if you're thinking core group and you're using that language with people, realize that when you launch, your relationship with those people will change, and where they've had a high level of access to you and are feel like they're part of the core, you're going to now have more people demanding your time, your energy, your attention, and they can feel lost in the process. So I would encourage you to have healthy communication with whoever is helping you start the church, about what their relationship is, about what your relationship is, and that's probably a whole nother seminar. But 40 committed people, whether they sign the dotted line or not. We've had church planners who literally have them sign covenants. That's fantastic. I have nothing against that. We've had church planners that is just like, okay, we met over coffee. I looked them in the eye and said, I need to know, are you with me or you're not? That is fine. I don't think you have to sign the dotted line literally. But those are people you can point to and say, Dale is going to help me do this. Dale's on board. He's going to make this happen with me. So we say 40. Doug said 60. The second level is he challenges church planners to have 600 people that he's in a relationship with. That you know their name, you know a little bit of their story. They've not bought in, but you know them, they know you. I think that's great. That's a pretty high bar. But I don't want you to think that if you have a relationship with 100 people, 100 people aren't going to come to your church when you launch. Or I'll word it this way, 100% of the people that you have a relationship aren't going to come. So if you want 100 people, then you need to be relationally connected with more than that. The third level is the network people. You probably haven't shared stories with them, but you have some sort of, you've connected with them somewhere. You met them at a coffee shop or something like that. Doug says 1,800 people. I've known church planters that absolutely did that. They hit that out of the park. They knew, 2,000 people by name. They didn't know everything about them, but they knew them by name. Finally, and then I'm going to work the funnel backward, the fourth level is the people who get your marketing. They challenge 180,000 people. We are still a fan of direct mail. We'll talk about that in a second. But that's a great way to introduce your church to 180,000 people. You're thinking, how in the world do I do that? Billboards, radio advertising, all kinds of stuff. So let's.
It depends on the community as well. If you're in a rural area, 180,000, you know, possibly.
There may not be 180,000.
Right. That's true. Have to mail two states over to get it.
Correct.
So it depends on the context, but that's we're talking yeah. about suburban, metropolitan kind of areas. That's
good
a
call, Dale. Let me qualify too. I don't want to put guilt on someone about these numbers. What I want to do is stretch your thinking that, you know, you probably need to add to whatever you were thinking to get the kind of momentum you want to have a healthy, thriving, growing church. You know, you were probably thinking, or maybe not quite a zero, but hey, if I can get 10 people, man, we can make this happen. We can change the world. It is really hard to change the world with 10 people. Jesus did it with 12, but he's Jesus, right? So you're not. You're probably going to need more people. Sorry to break that news to you. So let's talk about what marketing is. We define marketing as communicating with people that you do not already have a relationship with. You know, this is basically giving people an opportunity to hear your message, to hear about your church, to hear probably secondhand, not directly from your mouth, about your church. Yes?
Could you give us a ballpark of how many people are you thinking in that city, just so we can scale it down to our size?
That's a good question, because it's...
I have 6,000 people in my community.
Yeah.
So it's smaller, but it's...
You know, reaching... You know, having 6,000 people hear about the church is not unattainable, even in a community of 6,000 people, because you have some advantages there. Since it is a smaller community, a 6,000 piece postcard is not that expensive,
right,
and you could do a 3 or 4 card series, and it's a lot of money, but it's not like, you know, when you're in New York City and you have 6,000 postcards, you're hitting one building. So you've got that potential. You only have so many. Actually, we'll get to outreach in a minute. But you have, you know, baseball fields where you can go serve people, and there are only so many baseball fields. So it's easy to go out to where kids are. I don't know why I'm picking on baseball fields, but where people are gathering, you can get out and serve them. Right. And you know, probably you're not going to get all 6,000. But if you're setting your goal of how do I connect with 6,000 people? That's probably not undoable in a small context.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that'd be great.
So I wouldn't want to think in terms of percent. I don't think that's the same thing. If you're thinking in terms of distance, we encourage people to think how far their local Walmart is. This isn't always true, but people typically aren't willing to drive a whole lot further to church than they are to Walmart. We have a lot of Walmarts in our community, and when we draw, you know, circles of how far people drive to our church, 8 miles grabs a whole lot, you know, a high percentage of the number of people who actually attend our church. Some of you from rural communities, like 8 miles, I mean, like, that's crazy. People are driving 30, 40 miles to come to church every week because that's how spread out, but your Walmart's only 30 miles away. So,
and how many Walmarts we have within 8 miles?
Probably three or four.
Yeah.
So I've heard the unchurched won't drive more than 5 minutes.
See, that wouldn't surprise me at all. Yeah. So, but I would still wonder, was that primarily a suburban study, or did it really hit some rural stuff? Mm-hmm. You know, another thing to think about, and we're getting a little off topic, but these are some good principles. Think about where people are driving. If you are outside of a city's center, more people are going to drive to you from further outside than closer in. So here's the city center, here's the interstate that goes out. If you're here, your likely area of influence is going to be like this. Because the people who live all the way out here are used to driving into the city center. Maybe for shopping, for work, for whatever. They just naturally think, oh, this isn't that far away. But someone here, or you know, here if it's the same distance, this is all the way out in the sticks. Why would I go all the way out there? why would I drive out to go to anything? Does that kind of make sense? Mm-hmm. So, and in fact, for that reason, I've had a number of church planners want to meet up here because this is their target. And we really encourage them to meet closer to this edge because then it was just a more natural, people just feel like that's not very far away. Our church definitely has an ellipse like this. We have a lot more people coming, in our case, from the west than we do from the east because people who live in Fairfax City, Chantilly is, why in the world would I go to Chantilly? But people who live that same distance from the west, I'm in Chantilly all the time. So what's the big deal going out on Sunday? Does that make sense?
In a densely populated area, you can focus your direct mail campaign in that circle right in the
We do that with our direct mail campaign. We do not draw a radius directly around our facility. It is a whatever ellipse or whatever shape like that to take advantage of
that.
If
you go to, I'll write this up here, everydoordirect.com, you can actually, from there, play around with the different mail delivery routes and kind of see what it would look like and cost you for your direct mail campaign. It's a great website. So
let's talk about direct mail. You mentioned that it's not so effective where you are. That is very possible. There are communities where direct mail is not as effective as it used to be or not very effective at all. Our experience is it's still very effective where we are. I just talked to a church planner yesterday that said, it's really funny because no one in our community thinks direct mail works, so we're the only church doing it, and therefore we get a good response from it. Mm-hmm. It's like, huh, that's kind of funny. It doesn't work for anyone else, but it's working great for him because no one else is doing it. One of the reasons I like direct mail is it is just a really easy way to hit a bunch of people that you don't have a relationship with. It ends up in their mailbox. They get it. They might throw it away. But if you're going to do direct mail, think in terms of shelf life and or in terms of making your direct mail refrigerator worthy. Let me explain what that means. When every postcard we send out, we want it to be engaging enough that someone wants to hang it up somewhere, whether it's their refrigerator or at work. Our biggest win was, and I know this doesn't sound like a win, and in some ways it's not, but I loved it. We moved our offices into a new building, and I went next door to introduce myself to the neighbors and find out what they did. There's a long story there. And I sat down with a guy in his cube, and I looked up, and I saw our church postcard hung in his cubicle. And I said, what's the deal with the postcard? Not telling him I was with the church that sent it out or something. He said, oh, I don't know, some church sent it out, and we just all thought it was funny, so we each hung up a different one from the series in our cubes. Like, that's awesome, because here's the deal. They weren't looking for a church. They're not interested in church. But we made a connection. They kept the card, so if and when they're ready, they still have it. And we have stories of that at New Life. Our first children's minister at our second campus came because of a three-year-old postcard. We knew it was 3 years old because she came at the wrong service time. Fortunately, we were still at the same facility, but they actually showed up with the postcard 3 years later, and it's like, what's going on? Well, we got this 3 years ago. You know, the guy worked in the White House. She was a school teacher. They had a boy and a girl, a dog and a cat. I mean, they had the life going. I mean, they had everything. Cancer hit. Okay, maybe God, you know, has something to say about our lives. Maybe we should go find out about God. They pulled the postcard out of their end table where they had thrown it, saying, you know what, we really don't care about church or God, but if we ever do, this is the kind of place we would like to go. So they kept it. So there's something about a shelf life.
Yeah, we also like to use comedy, something funny, so something it'll grab their attention, and something to local context, too. So like the interstate, Highway 6 is by our area, and everybody knows it's craziness. And so you have something like that. Life's too short, church.
Yeah.
Life's
scary, church
sure shouldn't be. Yeah.
I'll show you a couple postcards at the end.
Got that. But it's something that people can relate to. It's not just some clip art of a church in the country that people are going to
Don't use clip art.
Yeah, don't
use clip art.
Something local that people are going to relate to.
Don't use clip art, please. So, in fact, that is one of the part of the reason direct mail does not work if you just send out 100,000 cards and expect 100 people to show up. Direct mail can, done well, build brand awareness in the community. We view direct mail as a tool to break down some barriers between people and the church, so that when members of the church invite their friends, they've already had a positive interaction with the church, and therefore they're more likely to say yes to their friend. It's also a tool for their friend to say, hey, did you see the postcard my church sent out last week? You know, would love to have you come. So it's not the magic bullet. You cannot just send out, you know, pick a number, 100,000 postcards and expect to have a church of 500 next time. If that's the only interaction they have, then it will fail, and that's what the next piece of the funnel is for.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're going to mention this next, but direct mail shouldn't be the beginning point. You should have already established name recognition, so when they get the card, they go, oh, yeah, that's the church that does that community thing in town where they give out free ice cream, or they've already seen your name. You have to establish name recognition before so they can make a connection with a card. It shouldn't be your first touch with somebody to get that card, even though they already know. They've seen the logo. They've seen your people with T-shirts. They've seen you already. So that's the connection now they're making with the card.
Often it's just the final ask. I would also say I would send 4 cards to 20,000 rather than 1 card to 80. The repetition will increase your response rate. So even though it's like, wait, but I'm hitting a quarter of the number of the homes, that's been our experience when we talked to our marketing company. They agreed that that's their experience as well. Online advertising, yes, 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 yes. The problem is when people view it as one or the other, you know, that it's like, oh, well, we don't have to do direct mail because we're going to do online and we only had to spend $100 on online. I would say take $500 out of your direct mail budget and put it on online. Online is a great way to reach people. Please do Facebook. Facebook is amazing on how you can target people and get the people who you're looking for. The reality is, though, whether you're online or direct mail, I believe in casting a wide net. Yes, our target is men who are 34, who have 2 kids, a wife, who are disfranchised from work, who are upwardly mobile but haven't yet attained it and are dissatisfied with life. I mean, we have a very clear, I can picture in my head who I'm trying to reach. But that doesn't mean that I don't end up with a Dale Spaulding.
I'm only 34, so
yeah,
in case you haven't
known. Who, you know, becomes a huge asset to our church. So we believe in casting the net wide and letting God, God make the connections. Realize as you get older, you need to trust the younger people in your church with your marketing more and more. To be honest with you, I don't quite get our current mail campaign that we just sent out, but I'm getting old, so I don't have to get it. Everyone on staff who was in their 20s laughed out loud when they saw it. It's like, all right, if we want to keep growing and reaching younger people, then that's a win. So, and they weren't laughing at it, you know. if your 20-somethings are laughing at it because you use cheesy clip art, then that is a problem. Social media, please, please, please do that. Get some champions. Social media as a marketing tool will fail if you simply use it as a marketing tool. And what I mean by that is if you have a Facebook account, don't have every post or every other post or even every third post be, hey, come to church this Sunday. They've heard that message. You want to engage the community. You want to ask questions and get them to speak back to you. You want to comment on other people's stuff as much as you can. If you see something cool going on in the community or, you know, even like, gosh, I'm trying to think of a great example. Some, local Chick-fil-A. I don't know why Chick-fil-A is coming to mind. Chick-fil-A's doing some event, you know, post on their thing, hey, you know, congratulations for winning this award or whatever. Post on the school Facebook account, congratulations to the football team for winning the championship or just last night's game against the rival, whatever it is. You want to be as interactive with people and with organizations as possible. If people look at your feed and all they see is you telling them what to do, you're irrelevant to them and they're not going to pay attention to your feed.
You want to be a contributor to the conversation.
You got to get some help. Yeah. You know, don't try to do all this yourself. You know, get somebody.
Especially if you're over 30.
Right. Somebody that's in the right age group that can be your Facebook champion. Yeah. That's just really running with that.
Whether you're using direct mail or something else, some people have great luck with billboards. Some people have great luck with movie screens. Movie screens are hit or miss. Know your community. Try it. I've seen guys in communities who swear movie screens, you know, the pre-show things. Other guys, it's like, yeah, we did it for 6 months, and we think we can point back to one person that came because of it. It's an awful expensive way to get one person. But whatever you do, don't put all your eggs in one basket. You need to be seen in multiple places. You figure out how to get your message out there. Again, this is all about letting people hear your message, hear about your church, hear something positive. The next thing is outreach, and this is where they get to experience it. This is where they, you know, you get kind of the touchy-feely thing. You're handing them a water bottle as they're, you know, going down the bike path or something like that. I'm personally, and again, this is one of those things where maybe you've got to wrestle with this. I've known guys that print, you know, custom water bottles. They last about 100 yards down. They drink it down, then throw it in the trash can. So you paid an extra 50 cents a bottle to get your logo thrown into a trash can. Maybe that'll work for you. Maybe it won't. Just when, you know, I tend to think in terms of sticking ability. I would rather just say, hey, here's a water bottle, and have them ask, and give them something like a magnet that might go on their refrigerator, or a pen, or something like
t-shirts.
That. Doesn't have to cost. T-shirts are great.
Quality
t-shirts. Love, yes.
You don't try to cut costs, because if you get a t-shirt, you've seen them, right? They're all like out to here, the sleeves are, people aren't going to wear them. You know, spend the extra, get quality t-shirts.
Next Level is a brand. Next Level is a brand. Love their shirts. They're affordable, but a lot cheaper than, you know, Hanes. A lot nicer than Hanes, but don't cost a whole lot more. Here's the thing. If you're going to do outreach, and whether it's an event that you're providing that they come to, whether it's a service you're providing, please think about what someone who's not connected to a church wants to experience. I know that's really obvious when I say it. I had a church planner who was going to, but he got a booth at some sort of county fair or something like that. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. You got a booth. Great. What are you going to do with it? He's like, well, I think we're going to have a raffle in order to get people to sign up for a mail list. I'm like, great. I love raffles. That's awesome. What are you going to raffle off? He said, a Bible. And I'm literally sitting there on the phone thinking, okay, how do I tell this guy? He's not thinking. And he said, okay, you're really quiet. Let me explain. He's like, it's a really nice Bible, you know, leather. We're going to engrave their name on it. And I'm like, dude, no. Why would someone who's not connected to another church want to sign up for this? It's like, you're going to completely miss what you have told me your target is. Give away an iPad. Well, that's awful expensive. I know, but everyone wants one. So you give away something that everybody is going to want. Now, it doesn't have to be an iPad. It doesn't have to be super expensive. We've got a guy in Baltimore. He's inner city, right in the middle of where all that disaster was happening last year. In fact, he was at Exponential while all that was going on. It was a wreck. They had a big street fair carnival thing. They were giving out branded dog poopy bags because dogs are huge there. I mean, everybody has dogs. So they had a dog watering station with a whole bunch of bowls of water, and they gave people poopy bags for their dogs. But
people remember
people
that.
People wanted them.
They remember that.
And they remembered
they
it.
Remember it.
But people wanted them. Guy in New York really, really struggled with how to connect with people. And, you know, I wasn't thinking right this time. I was stupid. And I'm like, what about subway maps? And he's like, dude, if we live here, we know where the subway goes. Like, oh, right. Only tourists want subway maps. He wanted to pass out bottles of water, and he had problems because he kept getting kicked off the sidewalk. He finally came up with, okay, what's highly portable that I can put in people's hands. He gave out packs of gum, just Wrigley's. And, you know, you could easily have in one hand like a whole carton of gum and just walk around, hey, you want a pack of gum? And it sounds really cheesy. He had some great conversations with people who were like, why are you passing out gum? Well, actually, I'm here with Forefront Christian Church, and we're just getting started in the area and want to let people know we're here. Oh, that's pretty cool. And some of them would just keep walking. Some of them would ask for more information. But he found a way to just start a conversation with people for them to experience something positive about his church. And that's great. So remember who the event is for. Don't do churchy things for the unchurched. And this is not a one and done event. So you go out and you pass out, you know, 10 cases of water at the ball field. Think about, okay, what's the next step for those people? Can you also give them a business card that has your website address on it and say, hey, check out our website sometime? Can you invite them to, business cards are pretty cheap. You can get 1,000 business cards for, for free on Vistaprint, but you're kind of limited there. But, you know, 50, you know, 100 bucks, depending on where you go. Pass out business cards with it, inviting them to the next event you're doing, inviting them to something. Church on Sunday morning might be a big step for them, but come up with, it might not be, but come up with a next step for them. How are they going to follow up after experiencing whatever you did for them? Another thing about outreach, and this is going to go a little bit towards networking, but not necessarily, think partnerships. Some of the best outreach events can be done in partnership with someone else. So Chick-fil-A has a family night. Ask them, hey, can we come provide free face painting? You know, what Chick-fil-A is going to say no? Have your face painter wear a shirt that has the name of the church. Give them some business cards. You don't have to be proselytizing, you know, the big bad word where everyone that comes up, you're hitting them in the face with the gospel or whatever. Just be available at other events and let conversations happen.
Balloons are something we do when we go to an event. There's tons of balloons with our logo and our website. Mm-hmm. Kids love them, and they'll haul them around. They'll be in the house, it'll deflate, and then the mom sees the logo and the name again, so it sticks around a little while.
We probably have killed a few geese, though, right?
Yeah.
Balloons aren't, yeah.
We actually partner with a software company.
Yeah.
And quarterly put on a mobile food pantry.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
It's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all over town.
Yeah, and so your level of effort in planning that is cut dramatically because they're running.
Well, we actually plan it.
Okay.
They foot the bill. The software company foots the bill.
There you go.
So it doesn't cost our church anything. Mm-hmm. We just have to have people there to work.
That's fantastic. So the two ways, you know, his way is, you know, someone else is paying for something that's expensive. Another way is, like, for instance, the Chick-fil-A example is they're doing the promotional work, they're getting a crowd there, and all you're doing is going and adding an added value that gives people a positive impression. The thing that he mentioned with the balloons, our county does a movie series in August. Every Saturday night in August, they show a movie for free on big inflatable outdoor screens and all that stuff, and we provide the family fun entertainment. So basically, we've got 2,000 people coming to watch these movies. They actually have two screens. It is a big event. And because parking is limited, people show up an hour and a half, hour and a half before the movie starts.
2 hours, yeah.
So what are they going to do for the next hour and a half, 2 hours?
It's all kids' movies. So.
So we go and we take our carnival games, our band plays. We have coloring sheets, moon bounces, stuff like that. And we actually have stories of, we had a staff member in line at Giant, our grocery store, saying to her friend, what are you doing? We're going to go to that New Life movie night.
I thought it was
not our movie night, but we're there, and there are so many of us with our shirts on and passing out the balloons or frisbees or whatever, that we're getting credit for something that we actually do a small portion of. The county pays for the movies, the all that stuff. Anyway, so think about partnerships and how you can engage in someone else's event. Now, again, you need to walk this line of it's somebody else's event, so you have to respect them and their wishes. Again, we're not like, you know, cramming stuff in people's hands against their will or anything like that, but we're available for conversations. They see our shirts. They're experiencing our message that we are a safe church, personally. That's what outreach is all about, letting people experience your church. Does that make sense? Great. Networking, a couple different options here on what this means by this. Part of this is we try to get to know our local politicians. We try to get to know people who are influencers. Malcolm Gladwell talks about connectors in his book Tipping Point. Who do we know that can tell us who we should know that can get us in with something? Now, trust me, every politician has heard from another church planter who has said they're there to help and has been let down because nobody ever actually helps. So our encouragement isn't for you to go to the politician and say, I'm here to help, what do you need? Go in and say, I would like to learn about our community. What can you tell me about Chantilly? What's really great here? What are the good things you see going on? What are some of the struggles you have? What do you struggle with? Wow, can I pray for you, you know, for that? And let it percolate and see how maybe you can come back and say, hey, I have this idea. You mentioned that you're really struggling with, you know, kids getting in trouble after school. You know, what do you think if we provided some after school tutoring 2 days a week to at least give some of the kids somewhere to go 2 days a week to get them off the streets or something like that? Would that be useful? You better believe it's going to be. And you're actually coming to them with an actual proposal to actually do something. And it's based on what you learned from them. Now, what's going to happen is that politician's also going to talk to someone else about you who's going to talk to someone else about you, because you're actually, again, adding value to what the politician is trying to accomplish. If you Google community needs assessment, a great organization called Compassion by Design, I believe it's compassionbydesign.org, if I remember correctly, has this great process to help you network in your community. We did, it was like almost 1,000 interviews with people in our community. It was everything from people we stopped on the sidewalk to school principals to politicians. Real estate agents are often very well connected. There's something about the personality type of real estate agents. It's not just the fact that they're meeting all the new movers in the community, but they seem to be really connected with the community. So we interviewed a whole bunch of people, and that just got our name out there because they all ended up being our advocates just because we were asking questions. We weren't telling them, this is what you should do, and we weren't telling them this is what we are. It was more just, hey, we're here to serve and help. Tell us about the community. What's going on? And it's funny how when you remove your agenda, how God connects the dots when you're networking. This has led for us to, like, the county thing with the movie thing. That didn't happen because we cold called someone. It happened because they knew us, we knew them, they called us. When Hurricane Katrina happened, you know, we could have tried to figure out our own thing, and what we did instead is we just called up Michael Fry, who we'd had these conversations with for years, and said, hey, you know, can we provide some volunteers? What can we do? You know, what are you doing? What are you seeing? You know, how can we help? And he said, actually, I have some containers that can go down. I have a parking lot to park them in. And we've been asking ourselves who can help actually man the containers to collect the stuff. So, you know, right up there, Community Bank, New Life Christian Church, and there was a third sponsor. But all because we were networking beyond our circles initially and even continuing without an agenda. Does that make sense? But these people become your advocates to other people.
We did something similar, just the community needs assessment.
Mm-hmm.
As we launched the church, we discovered that the area we were in
had a drug abuse problem. Mm-hmm. So we approached the leaders, mm-hmm. and we used skating, like rollerblades. And,
sure.
We say this will get kids off drugs, mm-hmm. you know, if they're not just hanging out and just, you know, mm-hmm. doing nothing. You know, and the community rallied behind us.
That's fantastic.
Police blocked the roads. Mm-hmm. For us to just have a skating event. Mm-hmm. And it was just a blast. I mean,
yeah.
And the politicians rode on that.
Yeah.
To say that we are supporting what these guys are doing. Mm-hmm. And we got to hand out our.
Fantastic. Right. It's funny because probably half the people in this room are thinking, well, duh, of course drugs is a problem. It's with the community needs assessment, it's not just about finding the magic bullet. Half the benefit of it is getting the word out there that your church and you care and you're trying to make a difference without saying, we're going to solve your problem. Because, again, they've heard it before. They've been overpromised and underdelivered, but that's fantastic. That's exactly what should be happening. That's wonderful, and yeah, that's wonderful. So let me connect a couple dots. Branding. Let's just talk a little bit about having a clear message. Your logo is hugely important. I could do a whole half hour about logos. Don't stress about having the perfect logo, but don't have a cheesy logo. Logos aren't that important, but what you need to do in your logo is put it everywhere. Make it so people recognize your logo wherever they see it. Sorry, I'm not wearing a church logo right now, I just realized. But we have kind of a distinctive N in a crooked box. And there's lots of meaning behind it and all that stuff, but it's irrelevant. The point is everything we do puts our logo on it so that whether they experience us at that movie night or passing out water or they see someone walking down the street with a shirt or a postcards or whatever it is, you know, bumper stickers, they're connecting the dots. Oh, that's that church. Oh, that's their church. Oh, that's that church. You ever wonder why politicians put out so many stinking signs? It's because people vote for them without even knowing who they are just because they've seen the name so many times. So let them connect all those dots. Put your website on everything. Everybody checks out the website before they come to your church. I used to say most people. I haven't found anyone that's come to New Life in the past 5 years that didn't spend time on our website before they came. I'm sure there are some people. So
okay.
Maybe not everybody, but everybody.
Sometimes connecting the dots is also fill in the blank. Oh, that's the church that
right.
does this. And so I'm working with a recent church plant in Harrisonburg, and there's something about ice cream. They're always giving out ice cream at events. So now that's the church that gives away ice cream. I don't think he intended that at the mm-hmm. beginning, but he's done so many different mm-hmm. events and supporting that and getting bulk mm-hmm. ice cream with a discounted Costco that now they're the church that gives out free ice cream.
Yeah.
That's now the word's out.
We're the church that does fun stuff. I mean, we're anytime there's a party in the community, we try to be there.
Yeah.
So yeah, whatever that thing is. Couple of things. One, you should be able to remember a web address. We had a terrible web address for years. In fact, we still have it. We've sort of started moving to the new one. Newlifeforme.com. Okay, so you go home and you're like, okay, was that newlifeforme.com? So we find ourselves every time. It's newlife4me.com. We've recently been able to get newlife.church, which we're very excited about. New Life is one of the most common church names from the 90s. Mm-hmm. Guess when we launched.
Yeah.
So every web address was gone, like, bam, gone. But anyway, come up with something. Short is good, but memorable is great. You don't want something that's 37 letters long, so there's a tension here between whatever. It needs to make sense. You know, thefoundry.com, revolutionannapolis.com. Even though revolutionannapolis.com is kind of long, it's two words. So anyone that sees it can remember Revolution Annapolis. Yes?
Yeah, I was going to ask, because I've heard this recently, that one of the best things about websites is to make sure there's some geographical identity with it?
I'm not a big fan of geographical identities because it can, well, that's that church for Chantilly.
Okay.
And if, I mean, part of it might depend on your context. In our context, everything blurs together.
We're multi-site, and I don't know if you're thinking multi-site, but you know, we didn't even want newlifevirginia.com. Or, well, first off, is it VA or is it Virginia? Because we're not that far from Maryland. We have a few families who come from Maryland, but it is not inconceivable that we would put a campus in Maryland. Right. So if we were going to do that, you better believe I would buy newlifemd.com as well. But then on our postcards, do we have to have two versions? But it can isolate people who aren't part of that geography.
Plus, if you go online at some point, we have an online church now. It's just not where you can go. An online community that, and we have people from around the world, actually, mm-hmm. that are attending. So that would also, yeah. we want to
now what you,
include them.
You may be thinking of is for search results of having, like, New Life - Chantilly so that Chantilly comes up. We actually own, like, Chantilly-church.com, and it just redirects towards our main one. The reality is I think Google is so smart that a lot of that old advice isn't as good as it used to be. And website search optimization is a whole different thing. But I want someone to see it on a sign while they're driving by at 45 miles an hour and be able to catch the web address and remember it. Newlife.church, I think, hit that really well. And again, it's just going through the filter. One more thing, let me think about it. On your website address, on your church name, run it by some non-Christians. Seriously, run it by some non-Christians. Like newlife.com is kind of long for some signs. Again, if you're driving down the road and you have this sign that's 2 feet by 3 feet, by the time you make it fit, and we never put the www, but still the text ends up very small. So we also bought nlforme.com, which I thought was, you know, kind of a genius way to, you know, newlifeforme.com, nlforme.com. Okay, it still works. Until someone pointed out, you know, your four looks like an A. So it's like nlame.com. Okay. Yeah, should have run that by some people who were under 30 and or non-Christians. Had a church in New York City, wanted to be called Two Rivers Church. Did you realize there are two rivers in New York? I had no idea. Apparently New Yorkers know that there are two rivers there, but it's not, they don't consider themselves a river city. It's New York. It's the Big Apple. You know, whatever it is, it's not a river. So I convinced the guys, like, look, go down to Starbucks. Please, please, please go down to Starbucks and ask three people what they think of the name Two River Church. Called me back the next day. Yeah, I came up with a new name. Of course you did. Run it by some people who aren't in your circle. I have some neighbors down the street. He knows I'm a pastor or whatever. He's not interested in church. One day I pray for him, please, you know, but for now he's just not interested. But he's my safe guy. I like run some of our postcards by. I just send him, you know, a copy of the postcard before we go to print and say, hey, just give me some feedback. His feedback can be invaluable because he sees stuff differently than I do. He's not an insider, and he's willing to share that with me. Not all your friends are. Some of your friends are going to try to protect your, you know, feelings, whatever. Their input's not as helpful. You need someone who's willing to say, what are you smoking? That's the stupidest web address, you know. I'm afraid to give some examples of bad stuff, but don't use churchy language. You know, Greek word church names can be interesting, but I think they're a lot cooler for those of us on the inside than the outside. I'm all for names that cause people to ask, to say, well, that's kind of cool, what's that mean? That's okay, but if they're just like, that's weird, you don't want them to think you're weird. You're trying to break down barriers. You don't want them to think you're weird. Just keep it simple. Don't use, you know, First Church of the Gospel Fire, Redeemer, you know, string all these
blood
things together.
Lamb.
Blood of the Lamb. Blood of the Lamb is scary. Anyway, seriously, you have sheep bleeding in your church. So keep it simple. I have said a whole lot of yes.
Your marketing and the direct mail and mm-hmm. the branding, mm-hmm. when you send out postcards, do you send out series specific non-branding. You'll have your logo, but it's about that series, which has a short self.
You mean the sermon series?
Sermon series.
No, because I
send out a branded, general, generic.
We keep it generic. I don't think most people care about what you're preaching. They're either interested in learning about God or not. Now, most of our cards don't talk a whole lot about God. We used to get a lot of, if you want to write that down, I'm going to bring up a postcard in a second. But if you're interested, reach out to us. We would love to talk more. I don't think people care what you're preaching about. Now, there could be something special if you're doing a big marriage push or something like that. But again, you might connect to a higher percentage of people who are struggling with their marriages, but a whole bunch of other people are going to say, well, that's not for me. So I tend to keep it generic and simple. We really do try to make people laugh with the postcards. Here's the thing, too. If you're going to send out a four-card series, they need to connect but not look identical. If they look identical, they only read the first one, and then they toss the other three. But if they're completely ADD and look completely different from each other, they don't realize it's the same church, and you're not getting that benefit of multiple touches. Let me see here. I think I just had some postcards up. Sorry, that's me and my son a couple years ago. I can't remember which year this was. This was recent. Which series is this? Okay, this is last year. We did this whole series, and we actually also put a lot of this in our facility about life is scary, church shouldn't be. I-66 is the interstate that no one wants to go on during rush hour because it does 3 miles an hour. I'm not kidding. But church shouldn't be. So life is scary, church shouldn't be. So we didn't answer the question on the front of the card. We posed a question. This is something everyone can relate to. It's just engaging enough that it doesn't go straight into the trash can. Our goal with the front is someone's going to think that's funny and put that on their refrigerator, and it's engaging enough that they're going to stop just long enough to flip it over. And when they flip it over, they're going to see church shouldn't be. Notice there's not a whole lot of text here. In fact, our more recent cards have even less text. Yeah. They're not going to read three paragraphs, four paragraphs on the back of your card. Give it to them quickly.
Christians might, but that's not your target audience.
Correct.
They might spend some time.
What to expect, music a little too loud, kids having more fun than should be allowed, and people trying not to take themselves too seriously. We try to keep it really, really simple. Now, here's one thing that I don't like about these cards. A lot of younger generation people, getting a postcard doesn't feel like an invitation to them. So I know that sounds funny to me. It's like I'm trying to come up with wording that makes it sound like you're invited without using the words you're invited, because that sounds
welcome.
Cheap.
Yeah,
please don't put join us. Yeah. They don't want to join you. Join us Sunday. They don't want to join you. They don't even know who you are yet. But come check us out. Come this Sunday. Watch online. Our newer cards all have, this one's an older because it doesn't have our online campus. We have more and more people watching our online services before they come in person. We have people watching them 3-4 weeks in a row. And these are people who surprisingly were not interested in church, but they were curious enough to watch a service online. And then they found, wow, this is good stuff. I want to learn more. I love the little kid with the monster hands under the bed. I know you can't see both at the same time. Dentists are definitely scary. Let me see if I can find the other one real quick.
Do we not use the grandma one?
We did have a grandma one. I love the grandma postcard. The grandma postcard was a little boy hiding behind a tree. And his grandma was looking for him to pinch his cheeks. Got the nastiest letter on that one because we're so misogynistic. The right word? And, what kid should be taught that he should be afraid of his grandmother? And it's like, no.
I love my
anyway,
grandchildren.
Yeah. It was really hysterical.
You got to be ready for that. If you're going to take a risk,
yeah.
You got to be ready for the phone call.
So,
take me off your mailing list.
This is the series that I don't get. And, you know, the young guys in the room are going to laugh at this, and all the old people are like, what? Let me go back. This barnyard fowl don't church itself, which just, that's a funny sentence to me, but I still don't get it. But people laugh at it. So if we can make them laugh, we can make them turn over the card, that's great. I really love this picture. That's just, this is when you start with a picture, and you're like, okay, what do we do with this? The skateboard and the beard. If it did, we'd be here. You'll notice there's fewer words on this one. We do have the Fall Family Fun Fest on there because we have a big event coming up. We've got one church, three locations. We've got the online stuff here. We do have this call to action thing. We started doing this more and more. We're down here. It says, bring this postcard for a free gift. The reality is very, very few people actually do that, but statistics show when you give them that specific call to action, they're more likely to respond. Again, that's part of our saying, please come, without sounding like we're desperate saying, please come. So even if they don't bring the postcard for a free gift, again, it's a way to help communicate to them, this is a fun, safe place. They're trying to give something away. Again, free on a postcard is a good thing. But yeah, so these are some of the weird, crazy postcards we do. I don't get it. I don't get it. It makes me laugh a little bit, but I don't get it. But everyone on staff who was below 30 loved it. And when I gave them like the three concepts we did, everyone under 30 pointed to this concept and said, roll with this. All right, we'll trust it, see what happens. So be willing to get out of your comfort zone.
Can you put your ID back up there again?
Sure, I can. What is this called? This is called Getting Butts in Seats, right? Yes. We are out of time. Dale and I will be here for a while. We'll answer all the questions you have. Completely seriously, feel free to call us. Feel free to email us. We'd love to talk. I know I talked really fast. I didn't answer nearly as many questions as I intended to. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Do a whole bunch of stuff. Some of it's going to stick. Thanks, everyone.